Line, Willie D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Joining us now is Rick Neuheisel, former college and NFL coach, now SiriusXM College Sports Channel. And before we get into probably the important things, you were D. Mace's offensive coordinator in Baltimore. I need your best Derek Mason story.
We don't have to think very hard to get this one.
We've got a full hour if we need to fill it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we could fill the hour. Let me first say that it was a pleasure and a privilege to be on the coaching staff with Derek. A pro's pro, to say the least.
Doesn't surprise me in the bit.
And sometimes when you get a guy who's kind of late in your career, you start offering limitations because you just assume that, you know, it's a little tired, right? That there's not as much rubber on the tire, so to speak. We made that mistake in Baltimore that we thought Derek couldn't go deep. We could not. And Derek was the first to remind us that he could. and he did. Everything he said he could do, he could do. But there was one afternoon where we had missed him on a third down and four, which was Derek Mason down, right? We missed him and didn't throw it to him. We had a relationship, so he immediately came to me on the sideline, and he said these words. Y'all watch film. Y'all watch film. And he's just kind of screaming at me. And I have, you know, all of us as assistants in the NFL have this real visceral reaction when we think we might be on television getting undressed by a player on our team. We do not want to make SportsCenter. We do not want to make NFL films. We don't want to be that guy that's on television getting ripped by the assistant. I said, Derek, yes, we watch film, but if you're going to yell at me, you got to stand over there because we cannot be seen where you're literally undressing me on the sideline. I go, I'm not doing this, man. You stand over there and we can talk. But he was dead right. He was open, just like he was always open. A pro's pro. A treat to be around, but I was not going on SportsCenter with D-Mace. No, I was not going.
You know what, Rick? I just realized something. That the year I graduated high school, 93, I took all my visits, went to Kansas, went to Michigan State, and I had some other places. Went to Colorado in 93. You were the offensive coordinator in 94, wasn't you?
I was the passing game coordinator in 94.
You just and I would. It was meant for us to kind of cross paths. And it was meant for you to be
and
to
coach. And because it didn't happen there, we found our way to Baltimore.
Exactly. Right. I remember I got recruited heavy by Colorado. It was just too far from home. I couldn't do it.
You know, Michael Westbrook.
Yeah, Michael
was from
Westbrook.
Chadsey
absolutely.
High School right there in Detroit.
Yeah, we played them.
And Michael would end up being the guy who caught that Hail Mary.
Yeah.
You know, Bill McCartney was a Michigan man.
Yes.
He had coached high school in Michigan.
He had been on heavy in
had
Michigan.
Had been on Bo Schembechler's staff, so – Michigan was home for him, so he always was going back to Michigan to find players. And ironically, Michael would be the guy that would go back to Michigan and catch that Hail Mary.
Oh, man.
To kind of ruin Coach Moeller's party, Gary Moeller's party that day. You talk about the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat in absolute real time when Cordell throws that ball. And the ball traveled 74 yards in the air. That's how long that ball was in the air.
My goodness.
It was like a golf shot. You just knew, okay, that's going to land right where it should. The ball gets tipped back up, which is the goal for the offense, just give you a chance. And there's Michael soaking it in. 105, 110,000 in the big house, quiet, stoic, euphoria. I'm out there trying to hug Cordell at midfield or around the 30, which is where he threw it. He's already down in the mosh pit in the end zone, and I'm face-to-face with Gary Moeller.
Uh-huh.
And Gary Moeller's just got this, like, he just swallowed the worst tasting thing in the history of the world.
And East Lansing loved it.
And I felt like, oh, man, I got to comport myself uh-huh. here. And then all of a sudden I'm staring at him. To hell with you. I'm going down here.
Going to celebrate.
Fun. But it was quite a moment in college football. Maybe still the best Hail Mary. I know Flutie had one, but that ball didn't even get tipped against Miami. This one was textbook.
Uh-huh.
And the other irony thing about that is we had actually thrown it at the end of the first half.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We made a halftime adjustment on a Hail Mary because we'd lined up our three wide receivers and tried to just straight release. And, you know, Michael was the slot. He'd tried to take an outside release. Ray Recruith was the outside receiver. They ran into each other and fell down.
Mm.
So we switched it. We switched the release at halftime.
How many times in your career as a coach had you done a halftime Hail Mary adjustment?
Never. never since. That's why it's just how things happen and the stories behind the story that are just phenomenal of how it all came to be.
Just listening to you and hearing everything that I've heard about you from D-Mace and your glowing reputation around this, you know, this media sphere, I know you love the game. But given all of the changes, NIL, transfer portal, you have to re-recruit your players every spring, would you want to be a coach in this current college football landscape?
It's a question I ask myself all the time because my son is in it, right? I have a son who's the wide receiver coach at UCLA, and he is affixed to his phone. He can't leave it. I think Nick Saban said the other day that they had done a study on his staff that, you know, just a few years ago, coaches in college football were spending, of the 52 weeks on a calendar, 33 of them were seven-day-a-week jobs. Mm. 33. It's up to 44. It's up to 44. Nick Saban on a radio interview with us yesterday said that the entire month of June, they worked every day. Now, that was where you had camps, and then you'd start to kind of slide off into a little family time. Not available right now. And we've done it to ourselves. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, and Derek will remember this, coaches in this profession are paranoid. Because there's the supply-demand numbers are not in sync, right? There's a huge supply, and, demand, there are only so many jobs. So to hang on to your job, you get paranoid about who's trying to take it. And it's not an X's and O's game as much as it's a Jimmy's and Joe's game. And so if you're trying to get the best roster, you're in a constant state of who's getting my guy. And now you have to worry about them taking the guys right from you. So it is a paranoid situation. And the other problem we have in college athletics, and it's nobody's fault, but it's a reality, and I'm not sure how we're going to fix it. But I keep banging the drum to make people aware of the problem. No one has the job description, as we sit here today, to fix college athletics. The job description is to make sure our conference is the best or our conference is healthy. We're all going about it from a individual, if we think about just your conference as an individual. I'm here to protect the SEC. I'm here to protect the Big Ten. Those two conferences are going along swimmingly. The other three now are fighting to be number three as we talk Power Five. The Group of Five, you know, thrilled that now we've got a chance to be in the college football playoff with a 12-team playoff program beginning next year. But still, on the back end of this thing, just hoping for some trickle down. It's not healthy. And poaching players from one another, tampering, whatever you want to call it, pay for play, not NIL. These things are all nebulous right now. We can put a bow on it and say it's all clean and nice. It's not. There's a lot of because we're all trying to get the best players so that we can survive. Survival of the fittest is the best way to describe college athletics right now, and that's not the way it should be when the paramount goal is to be education. We got to fix it, and somebody's got to be able, like Pete Rozelle did 100 years ago for the NFL with those owners and said, look, let's negotiate as one. That's why the NFL is the number one sport in all of sport. I mean, we have this love affair with football, but they negotiate, and these networks, they learn, sit there, okay, you have Thursday, you guys have Saturday, you guys have Sunday, we got you Monday, we spread it out with all the different networks, and we get the most from it. College is all doing it, you know, fighting each other, and they're leaving a lot of money on the table, which could be used to keep these educational opportunities for young people.
Now, do you think it will get to a point, Coach, where, you know, all of them start thinking on one accord and we all try to get a contract
we can
that
only
can
hope.
Help everybody?
We can only hope. But whose job is it to do that, right? I feel the weight. Greg Sankey's been wonderful. He's been here all 4 days. Most commissioners would have been here and out. The guy is by far and away the best leader we have in college athletics as we sit here today. I can feel the weight on his shoulders because his job's to be make sure the SEC's the best. Check that box. They are. It's by far and away the most accomplished conference in all of sport right now in the collegiate space. But he also sees these tremendous challenges, whether it be the life of a coach, whether it be student athletes and, you know, the importance of an education, name, image, and likeness. Is it pay for play or is it name, image, and likeness? He's been to Washington trying to get congressional help. He feels the weight of it because everybody looks at him and says, you got to fix this. His job's to do what he's doing. And he told me a story the other day about being in a meeting where they were talking about name, image, and likeness with a bunch of people that he had to be at the meeting. He was the chair from the Power Five sector. And all these young people who are in college athletics and leaders, fledgling leaders or accomplished leaders at smaller places, were listening to this conversation about name, image, and likeness. A very, very extensive treatise on this subject. And at the end, they said, any questions? And he had literally, as he listened to it, written down 8 or 9 thoughts on the conversation. And he sat and waited, and not one had a question. And he went crazy. He said, wait, can we be talking on the most important thing facing college athletics right now? The most important thing as we try to survive and save all these educational opportunities, which is supposed to be the mission statement of this whole exercise. How can we sit here and the leadership not ask a question about name, image, and likeness? Because we're all in a survival mode. We're all just, hey, I'm just going to keep my job. Mm-hmm. It's a wilderness right now, and we're trying to find our way through it.
In the wilderness, what would you advise high school athletes who are getting into this world? I would like to think that as it shakes out, and they educate them, so you hear stories, you learn the process, that maybe it doesn't become as much about chasing an extra few thousand dollars.
Right.
But it just seems like it's easy to get pulled into that when you're 17, 18 years old. If it's 10,000 or 20, it sounds of money.
You've heard the term, it's, you know, as we use our phones to communicate, you've heard the term FOMO, right?
Yeah.
The fear of missing out,
yeah.
Right? That's what's going on. And moms and dads have it as much as the kids. Moms and dads, and I get this from my son all the time, who's talking about what the conversations are now in the living room when you're recruiting. You can talk about the virtues of your school and the value of this major or that major on campus and, you know, where you're going to play and the beauty of the UCLA experience or you name the university experience. At the end of the day, what do you have for us? Mm-hmm. It's because I'm hearing these people.
Yeah.
And some of what you're hearing is outlandish and embellished. They're real, but they get down to that because if I don't get it, who's getting it? And we have a number of conversations that begin there. Name, image, and likeness was supposed to be where you get to exercise your brand and earn some extra money. The scholarships were all the same. They were going, when you get established, you can, you know, if they're selling Derek Mason jerseys, Derek should get a cut of that.
Right.
Right? We all get that. Name, image, and likeness right now is just subterfuge for pay for play. Lure you in. I mean, if you go to Texas as an offensive lineman, you become part of $50,000 a year if you're one of 16 offensive linemen. They get 16 different offensive line slots that get $50,000. They call it the pancake house. I mean, that's not because we can't name an offensive lineman at Texas right,
right.
now.
No.
That's not name image.
Yeah.
You don't even know who they are. You just know that they're playing.
They're probably pretty good.
The point is that's where we're headed, and we have no guardrails. States are making their own individual rules.
But isn't it short-sighted, too? Like if you're going there,
it's ridiculously short-sighted.
That money's long gone by the time you're
100%, but bird in the hand, right? And no, we're talking about an industry in college athletics that only 3% are going on to professional careers. Only 3, and less than that are going to have the career that Derek enjoyed. I mean, it's just an impossibility. This is about education. What we need to do is supersize these scholarships based on the revenue coming in. Have somebody collectively bargain on behalf of the players. We've got all sorts of models with these revenue shares with, you name the professional league. So you take that number and you say, I'm splitting this across. And to handle the Title IX implications, you say we're spreading it across the entire athletic department, not just football, but every student athlete's going to get this supersized scholarship. Then you get on campus. After your freshman year, you can get, and this will all be collectively bargained, so it will pass muster with the courts. Then you go, because that gives you an antitrust exemption. Then you go in, then you go into the world of name, image, and likeness. If you get a deal with a restaurant in town, great for you, right? If you get a deal with your jersey sold, great for you. Johnny Manziel, I think they would have said, would have made $50,000 on jersey sales. Johnny deserved it. Sure. Johnny football jerseys were going crazy. The bottom line is, though, we are going about this backwards because we held on to this concept of amateurism forever. Mm-hmm. We got whipped in a Supreme Court case, NCAA versus Alston, where Alston was challenging that we should have more resources for educational pursuits rather than a limitation on them while we're an amateur athlete. 9-0, the Supreme Court agreed with him. In a time and space where the Supreme Court can't agree on anything, right? It's 5-4 no matter what you say.
Right.
Right? It doesn't
matter.
That is
a great point.
9-0, they say, yeah. You're wrong. You can't do that. So now they're afraid. And the NCAA has been rendered neutered. They're, and Charlie Baker, you know, a former governor of Massachusetts, now the president, I don't know what he's going to do. I have no idea. They tell Texas, you can't have a state law that says you can give gifts to those who are contributing to a collective. You're going to be subject to penalties if Texas A&M or any other Texas school takes advantage of this law. In the law, it says, if you try to sue us, we're going to sue you.
Great.
And we know what their record is when they get sued in the NCAA. It's a stalemate. It's like the gunfight at the OK Corral. They're just staring at each other with guns. No one's going to pull the trigger. And that's where we are.
This is a guy that played for the San Antonio Gunslinger.
He knows the USFL. We are in Atlanta.
Gunslinging.
We need a Marshall Dillon. Yeah. We need a Marshall Dillon fast.
Last one for you. Your son's in a unique position now because at UCLA, you're used to traveling to Oregon, to Northern California. Well, now you're going to Nebraska. Now you're going to Iowa.
And keep going. You're to Rutgers.
Rutgers.
Piscataway.
Going to Rutgers. So, yeah, enjoy Runza's, Los Angeles Indians. Do you think conference realignment, should fans, college football fans, be concerned about conference realignment and where it's going?
I don't think you can. You have your head in the sand if you're not. But if you're UCLA, who was in the red, and Martin Jarman, the athletic director there, whose job description is get us back solvent, you had to take the money. When George Kliavkoff got the job as the commissioner of the Pac-12, he had one job in my mind, and I said this on our radio program. You better make sure USC is happy because USC is the bell cow of that conference, or was the bell cow of that conference. Listen, there were great stories about Oregon. There were great stories about Washington. They had their moments in the sun. Stanford with David Shaw and Jim Harbaugh had a moment where they were one of the top programs in the country. UCLA's been there. But at the end of the day, the Trojans, out of 11 national championships, they haven't been in the college football playoff one time. Some of that their own mismanagement, some of it just the Pac-12, they were the first to go to 9 conference games. Why? What are you doing? You're guaranteeing yourself 6 extra losses, and that costs you from being one of the Final Four. I mean, when the Big Ten went to 9 conference games, Ohio State lost a game at Iowa one year and lost a game at Purdue one year, and that's 2 years they were out. The Big Ten was out of the conference, the college football playoff. Stupid. I mean, don't hate the player, hate the game, right? The college football playoff committee has never said that you have to play 9 conference games to get there. So why are you? You're just hurting yourselves. At the end of the day, this travel is going to be a big deal. I keep arguing, football I get. Derek played in the NFL. He's traveled coast to coast. Once every now and then is fine. If you did it 4 times a year, you could survive it. But when you start doing it with these other sports and you go for a weekend and then you have to go for a weekend someplace else, that's going to be ridiculous. The rest of these sports that are not producing the kind of revenue that football is should be staying regional. And we should be competing there and then have national tournaments where we find out who's the best. But, again, the cart gets before the horse in this, and unfortunately we end up seeing what the consequences are before we figure out how to clean it up.
Logistical nightmare.
Oh, absolutely.
But it pays off.
Well, yeah. This is why we have Rick on. I mean, lot of great insight. He understands the game.
I understand the problems.
Now we need to see somebody to solve
them. We need to get the great minds in college athletics, and there are some great ones.
You could be part of it.
I would love to be a part of it, even if I just had to sit and listen. I would love to be a part of it because I care that deeply. I know what it meant to me. I know what these experiences are. My pitch in a living room when I was coaching Derek was always this. I want your son to have the same experience that I had. I was at UCLA in the 1980s. The Pacific Ocean was our air conditioner. I mean, it was phenomenal. I was getting one of the top educations in all the world. I was with so many good people. I was sitting there on a college campus that was vibrant, where Jackie Joyner was running for gold medals in the Olympics. I had Peter Vidmar was jumping around being the All-American gymnast in the Olympics. The basketball program, was phenomenal. The freshmen went to the Final Four, lost in the game to Louisville with Darren Day and Rod Foster and all those guys. I was like, this is incredible. I was around greatness. And that was college for me. We now are going for 1 year, for 2 years, and we're moving around. We don't get – there's no dear old you. Yeah. And to me, we are missing it, and the kids are missing it, not getting their education along the road. Now, we'll look back and say, well, they got their degree, but did they get what we really go for, which are those relationships forged on campus and the ability to realize how life works, because we're away from home, we're meeting all people from all different socioeconomic situations, and that's college.
Rick Neuheisel, he is the very best, and you can catch more of him on SiriusXM College Sports Channel. Appreciate you for joining us. We'll react to what he had to say coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.